Thank you for joining us for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Really appreciate you listening in today, because you've got a treat in store for you. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business called The Garden Hoe. And today we'll be talking about perennials to begin with. And, of course, we'll take your questions as well as we move along. So if you have a gardening question, I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or you can post your questions on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Liz Freemuth, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm great. You know, I took a look at my perennials. I've been gone. Mm-hmm. I was in Orlando for a week. And Jill Nadeau, thank you so much for filling in for me while I was gone. And I got back and I looked at my perennials this morning, and they look wonderful.
While you were gone, we had the most perfect growing weather. It rained, and then it got warm, and it's perfect growing weather for everything. So the perennials are looking good right now. So are the weeds. Weeds are looking fabulous. Yeah.
How do you use perennials? Well, let's see. You do a lot of garden design. Mm-hmm. How do you use perennials when you design a garden?
For the most part, when I use perennials, I'm looking at the overall character of the plant. So that can be shape, leaf texture, leaf color. Flower is kind of an added bonus, because flowers on perennials are only going to last for a week, you know, sometimes even a day. If you're talking about Hemerocallis, callus, the daylilies, you're really only looking at a short bloom time. So what you need to do is look long term and see how that fits within your landscape. And one of the things I tell people, if they're not sure how to use perennials or what they like for perennials or how to get a really nice succession of blooms, if that's what they want, is to go to your local garden center every 2 to 3 weeks. You know, take your conditions, whether it's sunny, shady, et cetera, and go in there and look to see what's blooming. And that will give you an idea of at least what's available locally to really get you some succession throughout the season. And if you do that for a year, a couple of years, it'll give you some really great ideas. More than likely, gardeners will take one or three things home anyway. So it's fun to do that.
Yeah.
But for me now, I look long term. I look at texture and color. And that really, really adds to the landscape when you've got a mix of everything going on.
What about smell?
Always smell. And, you know, some people have issues with smell, with scent on plants. Yeah. And so that's one of those questions that I ask people when I'm looking at what do we put into the garden is, do you enjoy the scent of the plants? Are you going to cut them? You know, some people really do perennial gardens to cut and bring in the house. Having a full, even a small perennial garden, something that goes all the way through the season, you're actually going to have enough to provide flowers for the house for the entire year. And so scent may be an important thing, and other people don't like to have anything smell. They just like it to look nice. So it really depends on the person.
Yeah. So there's lots of advantages to perennials, because I'm lazy to begin with. And they come up every year, and I don't have to do a lot with them. But I guess there's probably some downsides to it, too.
There are, because they are easy. Most of them will come back every year. Some are shorter-term perennials. You know, perennial really is a plant that does not complete its life cycle within 1 year. Biennials are something that will last about 2 years. Perennial tends to be a little bit longer than that. But we have some that are rather tender or, even kind of just a little bit touchy. And so they may not last more than 3 to 4 years. So then you'd have to look at replacing something like that. Perennials also have to be divided every 3 to 4 years, or else they start to die out. They'll get too crowded. They'll start flopping. They won't flower as nice. And so initially, in the first 3 years, they're easy as can be, because you pop them in and they grow and it's great. Years 4 to 6, then you're thinking, what did I do? You know, especially if anybody has had hostas in. You know, hostas is a tried and true perennial for semi-shade, heavy shade. And those things, once they take hold, you almost need a pickaxe to get them apart. And you can kind of tie them to the bumper of your car and drag them around, pop them back in the ground, and they'll grow. I mean, they're just so, so tough. But dividing them can sometimes be an issue. It can be a little bit tougher.
I've got a whole bed of daylilies that have been 4 or 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Time to
Yep.
get in there. I mean, they look great this year, but I'm...
You should actually right after they bloom.
Okay.
Yeah. You can get in there. And you know, many perennials, unless they're extremely touchy about having you mess with their roots, and then you probably won't find them in the garden centers except way back in the corner under the if you're a real serious gardener section. You really can divide things almost any time if you're careful. Because sometimes we can't use that, okay, this is the perfect time to move this plant. If you're moving or if you're on vacation or you have to go back to work or whatever it is, you may have to move them at a time when it's not optimal. So it's just taking care to leave enough roots with each division and make sure that you're getting it watered and mulched, et cetera, at the proper time. So daylilies, and one of the easiest things to divide, because you just dig the whole clump up and you start teasing those little fans apart. And once you get it out of the ground, you'll see where the leaves come off and you'll see the roots and you'll see them kind of interconnected playing with their roots, and you just sort of tease them apart. If you don't have the patience for that, two wide-tined forks, or what my grandma always called, go get me the potato fork. You take those and you put them backs together down through the center, and then you push those forks outward, you know, the handles outward, and that will actually start splitting that apart very nicely for you.
You want to come over with a couple of those forks?
I don't know. If you're serving cocktails, I can always be bought.
Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Always great to have Liz come by, and you can join in with your own question. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. You know what? Let's take a call. Rob in Winona, Minnesota has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Columbine. I have columbine growing under a pine tree, and they've been there for many, many years. But lately, in the last couple years, they are looking really spindly, and they're not doing what I really wanted them to do. What I wonder is if I have to periodically, I don't know, 5 years or whatever, dig the whole area up and start from scratch again.
How large of an area are you talking about?
Not very large, like maybe 8 square feet.
Okay. And is that solid columbine?
At the moment it is, yeah.
Okay. Color on your columbine, what is that?
Pinkish.
Okay. Any blues?
No.
What you might find is that the blues may be, especially in Minnesota, those may be a little bit easier for you to grow and have them keep coming back. Columbines do not have what I would call extreme longevity as far as a perennial goes. And they will send a lot of babies out. They'll drop seed and they'll send babies up. If you allow those to grow, you can repopulate. You may lose the mother plant, but you may repopulate via those babies. The pinks and the reds are actually not quite as hardy for the cold as what the blues are. The blues are more mountainous strain, and that you may actually have better luck with. But yeah, periodically, and you know what, there's so many new colors available out there that why not introduce them anyway? And if they're looking a little weak, what you might take a look at is whether they're getting enough moisture, because they're probably competing with the roots of that pine tree, and you may have to fertilize a little bit under there as well, especially if it's been a while.
There we go. Rob, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Back to, you mentioned water, and that reminded me about, if you're putting in some perennials now, for example, how much watering do you need to, you want to keep them damp all the time? Or
what you're looking at for all plants across the board is the equivalent of 2 inches of rainwater per week. So if you've got a rain gauge out there, that's actually the best way to look at it, because if you get 2 inches over a week, then you can actually see that that's what it is. Of course, that does breed mosquitoes, so you might want to maybe dump it out and keep tabs on a piece of paper or something. But once they're established, about the equivalent of 1 inch of rainwater per week. And when you are newly planting perennials, etc., you really do want to make sure that they're getting watered deeply. as with most plants, you want to not sprinkle them with a little tiny dribble. You want to make sure that you're wetting them sufficiently so that that water is going down to the lower parts of where you planted. So that's a nice soak. That's a nice slow soak.
Yeah, makes sense. Susan in Onalaska, let's turn to you now. Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. My question is, I'm a seasoned gardener, and I had put in a garden with a lot of pollinating plants, like the royal catch fly, the blazing star, lavender. But boy, this winter I lost so many plants, and I'm assuming that we had a lot more rain and ice this year, that it wasn't. Didn't have enough snow cover, but I do mulch around my plants. I mean, is there anything else I can do to protect my plants from the elements coming this winter?
If you are if you're concerned about lack of snow cover, et cetera, which some years we'll have, the drill, we'll have 40 inches, and other years we have nothing. This year was especially hard on plants. Everything from small up to the very large evergreens, we're seeing dramatic losses. And what you can do is you can actually cover, if you've got some that are extremely valuable and you don't want to take a risk with them, you can actually cover with straw or hay or something like that. But, and this is the huge thing, this is the big but, that you don't do that until the ground has frozen solid. If you do it before then, you're just creating a habitat, a nice bed and breakfast for rodents, and they'll eat the crowns, et cetera. So you can do that, again, if it's especially a high value or something that you're really concerned about losing, you can do that. But I say that with, we live up north. You're going to lose stuff. The beautiful thing is pollinators, the ones that you've chosen are fantastic. They should survive okay. But we have the ability to have things like peonies up north, and you can add those in as well so that if nothing else lives, a peony will. It's hard to kill those. They grow in Alaska. They'll grow here. It's wonderful. And they do also offer a lot of opportunity for pollination as well, especially if you go to the singles as opposed to the double bombs, et cetera. But I think really watering well up until hard freeze, just as you do with trees, that will give them added moisture into the system so that they can withstand a lot of root damage and top loss if they've got any top sticking up. If you're looking at how can I keep those perennials good over winter, follow the recommendation as to whether they need to be cut back, how far they need to be cut back, and when to do that. Some plants actually do better if you leave the current season growth through the upcoming winter and don't cut it back until spring. Grasses are a good example of that. Some of the other ones are just beautiful and they do fine. Coneflowers are fantastic. And the reason why you leave some of that growth, and I should back up to that, is so that there's protection for the crown, because some crowns on plants don't like moisture on them for extended periods of time. So you want to give some a little bit of tenting. And so the growth above the crown will actually provide some tenting for that, and it doesn't get as wet over winter. So those are just a handful of things that you can do that will help you out. Fertilizing, if you're going to fertilize really late season, I follow the same thing as what one does with turf. You go for the holidays, so go for Halloween and put on a slow release so that those plants are not going to access it until spring. So that gives it all winter to really decompose, get into the soil, and allow the plants to uptake it in the spring, and that'll do the best for them.
Yeah, I like to leave them. You get a lot of nice winter interest.
Exactly.
The other thing is beneficial insects sometimes overwinter in that. So.
Excellent point. Yeah. There's a handful that you have to for sure cut off, and that's peonies. And that's why just take a look at what the recommendations are and follow them as close as you can.
Susan, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, who provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your garden today with Liz Freemuth of The Garden Ho. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. All of our phone lines are filled, so I think we'll just go right back to the phones. And Jan and Viroqua, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Welcome back, Larry.
Thank you.
Liz, I am growing perennials that I would like to have bloom next year. I'm not trying to get blooms off of them this year, but they are cutting flowers. Mm-hmm. And I would like to foliar feed them or fertilize them at this time with that in mind to give them the most, to have the most robust plants for next year. Mm-hmm. They went in as seedlings this year.
Okay. I'm not so sure I would foliar fertilize them if they're seedlings this year. I think I, you know, is there a reason why you want to specifically do a foliar feed?
It's, they access it more quickly, and I can do it more quickly.
You can definitely. Again, seedlings, how big are we talking seedlings? No. Are they fairly good sized? Are they, you know, like really, truly, did you grow them from seed this year?
No, I bought them from a commercial nursery,
okay.
So they were in 2x2 pots when I put them in about 6 weeks ago.
Okay, then we're talking about a little bit larger plant. I was thinking baby seedlings. No, you should be fine to foliar feed those. I still would go with an in-ground fertilizer late in the season because they are going to, whatever you put on them, they're going to use up this year yet, and so you want to get something in the ground. How big of an area are we talking about?
Oh, 1,500 square feet.
Ooh, are these going to be for market?
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I can understand why you want them to be robust at this point. I think you can double duty on that and do almost as much as you would like, and they should be fine, especially as you're not looking for flowers this year. If you're looking at next year, I think you could probably do foliar feeding, depending on which product you choose, and then also how intensely you're mixing that fertilizer mix. You could probably do that a few times this year yet, and then do the fall fertilizing in the ground as well.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Jan. Appreciate your call. Well, Kate in Barneveld has a question for you, Liz. Let's go there. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some irises that bloomed vigorously for years. They're beautiful. Unfortunately, they were here at a property we moved into, so I don't really know what variety they are. But a couple years ago, they just suddenly quit blooming. The plants still look vigorous, but they completely stopped blooming, just really suddenly. I did divide them the year after I noticed that happening. I moved some of them to a much sunnier location, to try that. Really no help for them, even in either location. They're just not blooming.
How many years has it been since you divided?
A couple.
Okay, when you divided them, did you break apart the tubers, or did you take big clumps and move them?
Chances are, knowing my black thumb, I probably just dug them out. I probably just dug them out to kind of rescue them from that location.
Okay.
And I probably was trying not to break them up too much.
Okay.
I was probably trying to be very gingerly.
Okay.
And I probably just took a clump.
And I would not say that you have a black thumb. We're going to go with light green moving towards medium green and then to dark green because they're alive. So that is awesome. What irises are tough. They are extremely tough. And when you pulled that mass up out of the ground, what it probably looked like was a huge potato with growths all over it, big bumps and kind of stuck together. And what you can do is just break those apart. And so dig them back up out of the ground and be brave. They will be fine. They will be absolutely fine because there's a couple of things you need to look for. You pull that out of the ground and you can do that now. What I typically do when I'm dividing irises, if it's at a place where I can do it, is to set them aside for a couple of days after I work with them and let the surfaces that I've opened up air dry so that seals over, so you're not inviting any mold into those areas that you've opened up. So we're going to go step one, dig that back up out of the ground, take a look at that huge mass, and just ignore the foliage on the top. We're not even going to deal with that at this point. You look at that huge mass, and you'll see bumps, and just start breaking those off. And it should look like you've got a potato in your hand when you get done with that. Then after you've broken those up, and you can break them up into relatively small pieces, if you're feeling really tentative, just break it up into four or five, you know, just to get yourself started. But then what you want to look for are any holes in those tubers. If they have holes or if there are soft spots that are rotty, you want to get rid of those right away. So you're only going to keep the healthy ones. And then you take a look at those healthy ones, put them up on a screen or something like that, set them in the shade so that they can really air dry for a couple of days and then pop them back into the ground. Irises, just like peonies, are one of those things that if you put it in the ground and you think, oh, that wasn't deep enough, that's just about perfect because it should only be a couple inches beneath the ground level of the soil. And we're talking about just regular soil. In the past, in my own yard, when I was cleaning irises out, I would toss the remnants, the ones that didn't look good, into the pasture behind the house, and lo and behold, there grew irises. So they're a lot tougher than what we give them credit for. Don't worry about fertilizing until, again, late fall or next spring. Irises really don't need a whole lot. And it may take a couple of years for you to see some blooms develop, but you should see something once you divide those out.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Do you ever cover those to protect?
When they're outside air drying?
Well, no. Once they're planted, they're only a couple inches deep. That's mm-hmm. freshly worked soil. Do you ever have trouble with squirrels or something?
No, not usually. No? But most of the time, no. And surprisingly, now that you say that, surprisingly, no. They don't seem to like the irises for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
At least at my yard and in my clients' places, we have not seen anything for squirrel damage, et cetera. Sometimes mice during the winter, but otherwise, no.
Thanks again for that call. Tony in Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Tony.
Hiya. So we have a wildflower garden that we planted over the top of our mound, septic mound. And when we put it in, we were told to put some different grasses in there just to hold the soil. And, of course, the grass is spreading and I've got some weeds in there. Is there any time that you can actually spray like a grass killer on a wildflower, like after they bloomed or in the fall?
If it is specifically a grass killer and you don't have, you don't have any big blue stem or prairie drop seed or anything in your mix?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No grasses that you want to keep?
Well, I think I'd do probably like a spot. Just, you know, I would do like just a spot just to control a little more as opposed to getting rid of it all.
Oh, okay. Well, boy, there are grass killers that hit only grass. And the reason that they do that is that they're going after monocots. So anything that's a monocot, it will take out. And if you go to your big box, your garden center, whatever, and look for something that is a grass killer, you can do that. And you can actually safely spray that over the top of your forbs because those are not monocots. It won't affect them. And that should give you some control on the grass. If you're unsure of it, if you've got somebody in the area who does lawn care, et cetera, you may want to have them come in and do it for you because the commercial products are actually going to be a little bit better at control. And then you've got somebody who knows what they're doing applying them. I hesitate to apply chemicals myself. I'm not licensed for it. So even in my own yard, I hesitate because I'm just not trained for it. And mm-hmm. so if I need something done, I hire somebody in to do that one. But yeah, there are products out there that you could certainly give it a whirl.
Yeah. Thanks again, Tony. Appreciate the call. And Joan in Two Rivers has something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Joan.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. The first one is that my the foliage on my peonies has like a mildew. What can I do about that, or should I do anything with it?
Is it in a shady spot? Or is it in full sun?
Part shade.
Part shade. Okay. Have you seen mildew on it in the past?
No.
Okay. And has the shade changed at all, or is this, or have these conditions remained somewhat consistent throughout the years?
Actually, it's become a little more sunny.
Oh, okay. Well, that actually bodes well for you. Is there airflow, decent airflow around there?
Yeah.
Okay. What I would say is, if you have not seen this in the past and you're getting sunnier rather than shadier, more than likely it's just because of the weather conditions that we've had this year. The humidity has been phenomenally high, and not just during the day, but day and night. And powdery mildew more than likely is what you're looking at, and you can spray for it. And I think Brian's got a good recipe on his website
for
powdery mildew. And you can go to PDDC, and that's the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and click on powdery mildew for ornamentals. He's got a really great listing of publications, and that will give you a good recipe that you can do yourself to spray on it if it bothers you a lot. You can actually thin out some of the leaves, and that will increase airflow even more so than what it gets now. And eventually it will either start taking some of the leaves out, or you'll see a reduction in it. Powdery mildew likes humidity up to a certain point, but once it gets wet, then it doesn't like it. So you can also wash them periodically, and that will work. But I would say it's just weather conditions, and I wouldn't worry about it tremendously.
I wouldn't worry.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, Jill just let me know that a few listeners called to ask, hey, what's foliar fertilizing? They're not familiar with it. Could you explain foliar fertilizing?
Sure. It's fertilizer that you apply to foliage on the plants. So it goes on the leaves rather than in the ground. Excellent question. And there are many that you can do that with. There are miracle, you know, for the average homeowner, Miracle-Gro does make some that you can actually apply directly to the leaves. And the caller who had asked about, you know, can they do it, is absolutely right. It uptakes it much faster because it doesn't have to go through the soil and then through the entire system of the plant, and it actually just gets absorbed by the plant through the leaves. And so if you're looking for a quick change, that can actually do it. So if you've got a plant that has chlorosis, you may want a fertilizer that has something that's going to increase the ability of it to take in iron. Sometimes that's an iron chelate. Sometimes it's something else. Depends on what the plant needs. But you can actually get immediate, almost, results with that.
Oh, very, very good.
You have to use products that are formulated for that, though, because if you just go to put regular fertilizer on the leaves, you're going to burn the dickens out of them, and that will not be pretty.
It will not indeed.
Mm-mm.
Well, Rick in Eau Claire has something for us. Rick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. So I have a question for you. I have it's the northern side of my property, but it gets full sun exposure. Along this bed is it's a little blue stem prairie bed, and it transitions in this corner to under lilacs, but they have been trimmed back to the point where it gets full sun.
Mm-hmm.
And in this corner, I would like to have a specimen plant in which it's the centerpiece to that transition. I have tried Little Miss Sunshine Caryopteris, unbeknownst to me that was a zone 5 plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to mound it up with, I put probably about a foot and a half of good leaf compost on it to try and insulate it over the winter, and to no avail. And so this spring, I went and got a Aurelia.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Sun King?
The Sun King. And okay. It really doesn't like that location either. I think it's getting too much sun.
Okay.
I need a suggestion that's going to be in that chartreuse limey color.
Okay, that was going to be my question, if you're looking for chartreuse lime.
I kind of got my heart set on that lime color.
Okay. Hey, I know when a spot calls for chartreuse, you got to give it what it needs. There are a couple of plants that, you know, one I absolutely love for lower color, if you want to introduce and try one, would be the Heikana Chloe, or the Japanese forest grass in And my favorite is Areola, in not the all gold. The all gold is almost a little too yellow. It goes to yellow rather than chartreuse. That one may be marginal for you, but underneath something it would do well, but that's going to be a little bit lower. It's only going to be about 18 inches. But it's a beautiful grass that would complement your little blue stem in the, you know, as you kind of transition over, and it will give you that color at sort of a lower height. For taller height, how do you do with smokebush? Can you grow them by you?
Yeah. In fact, they grow in spades.
Okay, try.
I'm just afraid that they're going to get away.
Nah, you can hack and whack on those. They're fine. I would look at the, I'm pretty sure it's Golden Spirit, the smokebush. So it's Catinus, and then it's, I think it's Kegaria, and then Golden Spirit. And it can be a bit touchy. I would say if you locate a source for those, you may want to keep them on speed dial every 4 years, but it's worth it for the look of the shrub, because those you can hack back in the beginning of the year. The flowers, you know, to me, unless you've got a huge stand of smokebush, that's secondary to what the foliage does for you. And the foliage on this Golden Spirit is really phenomenally a chartreuse. It is fantastic. Otherwise, you could go into a more common plant, the nine bark, the Physocarpus. There's a gold, and I'm not going to remember the name off the top of my head, but there is a gold chartreuse leaf that does fantastically all through the season. And the new growth comes out a little bit lighter green, and then it goes to chartreuse as it ages. And that one, again, is a good hack and whack. So if it gets out of control, you can give it a whack, and it just keeps coming back for more and more and more. Another one that you could try, it's a little bit more difficult to find, is Colquitzia, and that's Colwkitzia, Amabilis, Amabilis. I had caffeine this morning, and I'm good to go. And that one, there's one called Dreamcatcher, and they may have it underneath another name as well, but the foliage on that is phenomenal, and it's a really good, another good, as I term them, hack and whack. So when you get tired of the height that they're at, you give them a cut, and they just keep coming back for more. That one has a really arching habit, and for you, I would say up that far north, it's probably not going to get into a must-hack situation for about 5 years. It has light pink tubular flowers in May, June, and then it's just chartreuse. And the leaves, actually, when they're new, have got like a little bit of an orange blush to them. So it's absolutely fantastic. So that at least gives you a few things to work with. If Aurelia Sun King didn't work for you, that's like super easy. So we'll give you some of the tougher ones to give it a whirl.
There you go, Rick. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's take another call. Cheryl in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. My question is winter hardy hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get it to come back this year. I planted them last year, and they bloomed last year.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't trim them or anything back in the fall, but nothing sprouted this year to speak of. So I didn't know, should I
start over. And they should, but this year was really, really bad for those as well. And typically we don't see, even in the southern part of the state, we don't see those start to poke their little noses up out of the ground until well into May, sometimes even close to the middle to the end of May. And I know one of the women who does hoe work, she, every year, we go through this every single year. She says, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead. And I say, no, just be patient, be patient. It's dead, it's dead, it's dead. Be patient, be patient. But after Memorial Day, patience is at an end, because if they have not popped up, then they're not going to. And typically, you will get them to survive very, very far north. So I'm guessing that it was the winter conditions this year. I would get one now, and or two, whatever you're going to do, get them into the ground and get them very, very secure in their roots before winter hits, because I have no idea what, I don't have a crystal ball. I have no idea what we're gonna see. If it looks like we're not going to have snow cover, then this is one of those situations that if you really want to keep them after the ground freezes, put a little layer of mulch or something over the top and then take it off in the spring. But they should be hardy. They really should. If it is truly a hardy hibiscus, it should have come back just fine.
And there you go, Cheryl. Thank you so much for calling. Gail in Marion, it's your turn. Hi, Gail.
Oh, hi, Larry. Question on newly planted hibiscus. Hibiscus, what am I saying? Hydrangeas.
Okay.
Okay, now I'm on track. Some are even blooming and budded out. Should I cut those off?
Should
I let them go?
What type of a hydrangea are you talking about? Are you talking about the kind with the cone-shaped flowers or the balls?
These are the panicles, I think they're called.
Paniculata, so the little cone-shaped?
Well, I have the bulbos. Well, those are blooming great. I mean, I planted those last year. Mm-hmm. This year I've got Pinky Winkies.
Okay.
And
Same family. If it's relatively in the paniculatas, then you can pretty much do whatever you want and it will be just fine. I like to leave the blooms on over winter because it gives winter interest. With the time period that we're at, you actually, if you cut the blooms off the paniculata, you may get some rebloom later in the season because they bloom off of old and new wood. And so this is early. To me, this is a little bit early for our paniculatas this year, but they're doing what they're going to do. And so if you want to give that a whirl, just cut it back to a node on a branch or something, and you may actually get some sprouting and some more flowers on it. It's kind of a personal thing when it comes to those. Do you like the old blooms on or don't you? And me, I'll just leave them go until spring and then cut them off in the spring.
Here you go. Thank you so much for calling, Gail. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services through her business. It's called The Garden Whole. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you here for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Liz Freemuth of The Garden Whole. Always great to have Liz come by. And look, I guess we have one open line, so you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Give a call with your garden questions. We've zeroed in a little on perennials, but we're kind of going all over the place.
Like that.
As we always do when Liz is with us. Cindy in Plainfield has a question for you, Liz. Let's go there. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I have a question about moving a very old honeysuckle vine.
Mm-hmm.
When should I do it, and how do I do it?
How old are we talking?
Oh, it's about as big around as my wrist, and there are a couple of large stems like that. And it's about 15, 20 feet high right now, so I'm assuming I'm going to have to wait until the fall and maybe cut it back before I move it to a new sunny spot.
And can I ask you why you want to move this? What color is it? One of those beautiful colored honeysuckles?
It's an old-fashioned orange one, and it's kind of getting shaded out, actually.
Ah, okay. It should really move fairly easily, even being that large, because honeysuckle is weedy and will grow almost everywhere. Some of the newer hybrids that they've done in various kind of strange colors, those are a little bit more tender. But an old-fashioned orange honeysuckle, I'd wait until fall, cut it back to maybe about a foot, 18 inches, and then dig up as much as you can. What you're looking at doing, and I would start maybe about 10 inches away from the vine stem itself, and see what you run into for roots. You're going to probably have to cut through some fairly large ones, but I don't think that'll bother it very much. And just, I would not wait until late fall. I would wait maybe until early part of September and then go ahead and start moving that, because you're going to want to get those roots healed into the ground and fairly sturdily set before winter comes.
Yeah, she's so, in Plainfield, so a little north.
Yeah. And so you could even probably do before Labor Day. So, yeah. But I think it should move fine. It really is a tough plant. If it has any babies next to it, I would pull those up and maybe set those in a different spot. So in case you lose the main one, you know, with something that old, the danger is that you're not going to get enough of the roots without going 2 feet away from the main stem of that vine. And so you really need to play around and get as many of those smaller feeding roots as you possibly can.
Thanks, Cindy, for calling. Appreciate it. Rocky in Nishkoro, it's your turn. Hi, Rocky.
Hi, how are you doing today, Larry?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm having some trouble with my – I have a lot of woods in wooded area of my property. And I'm having trouble with blight with the oak, and I was thinking about putting multiflora rose where some of the blight was.
Don't do that. Multiflora rose is really kind of a problem in woodlands. And so I think if you look at, because it can spread horribly, and it can actually, the roots and the shrubs themselves can actually choke out any of the babies that might be growing. And so what I would look at is something a little bit better suited to woodland for Wisconsin. And that may be introducing more trees up in your area. I would even look at some of the maples, because they will do fine. As some of the maples do very well as understory trees. And so if you've got some issue with oak, I would say introduce some other nice trees into the area. Multiflora rose might be something that you're going to regret putting in.
Yeah, and they're not the easiest thing to get rid of either.
No, once they're in. But I can understand the reason why, because you want something that's going to cover and fill quickly.
Sure.
But I really think that you could look at more native shrubs and trees that could go back in there rather than a multiflora rose.
Yeah.
Keep digging around. Go to Jung's and look at their stuff. They've got mm-hmm. a nice selection.
Yeah.
And then also our prairie guy in Westby. Is it Westfield or Westby?
Oh, and I suddenly blanked on his Neil DeBolt.
Yeah, Neil. He may have some suggestions for natives for your area, for shrubs.
Yeah, Prairie Nursery. Mm-hmm. Neil DeBolt. Let's, and good luck, Rocky. Thank you for calling.
Sorry he's losing his oaks. That's too bad.
Marilyn in South Range, it's your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have a very beautiful, very healthy Annabelle hydrangea. Mm-hmm. And every fall, I don't know if I just don't know the answer, but how should I prune it back, or should I prune it back over the winter?
Where is South Range located?
Right about 10 miles south of Superior. So we're way...
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're way up there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How old is your Annabelle now?
Oh, maybe about 10 years.
So whatever you've been doing is working really well.
Well, I've done different things. One year I cut them down to about 6 inches. Another uh-huh. time it was 18 inches. Uh-huh. I think last year we were so busy that I didn't get a chance to do it. So I had to prune, some of the dead branches mm-hmm. out.
How were the flowers this year, though? Were they bigger?
I can go out and look. Bigger? No, they're about what
the
they normally are.
Okay. Oftentimes when we cut the Annabelles back really far, what you'll get is more blooms, but they're going to be a little bit smaller. And the reason for that is that they set terminal blooms, and that's the main bloom. So you probably, the ones that you have are going to be the terminals rather than the mains. And they're great, and if it's working for you, I say continue to do what's working. You know, it sounds like you've tried a bunch of different things. In my yard, Annabelles don't get a lot of attention until spring, and they get a little rangy looking after a bunch of years, because if you don't cut them back, they're not going to sprout new growth at the base. So every once in a while, I need to cut them back to about 18 inches. And then, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years down the road, then I'll do that again. So you can do a multitude of things to them, and they'll respond fine. What I worry more about the Annabelles is having them die off that far north. And if they're living, then whatever you're going to do to them, sounds like it's A-okay.
Yeah, it sounds like that to me as well. Marilyn, good luck. Thank you for calling. Linda in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. My question is also about hydrangeas. We've had been experiencing a drought. I live outside of Wausau, and it's been a very dry summer. And in the past, my landscape guy in the fall has cut my hydrangeas back, and I have probably about 6 vanilla strawberry, and I've got maybe 4 little limeys.
Mm-hmm.
And I put some other ones in this year, but they're just, I only have one that's gotten any blossoms on it this year, and they're very small. And I'm wondering, and then the other ones are, they're all like really vegetative with long branches sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're very green, but I'm wondering if it's related to the drought or, and at this point, can I cut them back some and will they flower? I've left them kind of go because I'm thinking, well, I don't want to cut them off. And if they're blossoms on the end of those.
Yeah.
Long ones that are sticking out, those long branches.
You should at this point be able to see, you might even be another week before you see them up in Wausau. You should be able to see the development of those buds at the end of the branches. And you should be able to see that within a couple of weeks. Let me ask you, how hard are they cut back?
Well, probably, you know, it depends who he's got on his crew.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they probably were cut back to no more than like 18 inches.
Oh,
and
they're
you know, they're pretty big. They've been in for about five years.
Yeah, I think what you're going to want to do is have them maybe increase the size on those a little bit. Even little limelight, that will get much taller than 18 inches. And in years like this year, where we saw a phenomenal amount of branch growth on everything that was shrubby, I went through and cut some branches back 3 weeks ago, went back to the place, and it looked like I hadn't touched them at all. And they're very elongated, very green, and actually relatively brittle because they've got so much water in them. And you having a drought, I could see where, yes, you're going to have some decrease in the size of the blooms, but you should be seeing more of those. And again, within a week to 2 weeks for you that far north. Otherwise, I would say really be patient. If you're asking them to come in and prune them every year, you may have to give them a little more guidance than what they're getting from their crew chief, et cetera. They, you know, oftentimes the crews do know what they're doing, but they may go just a pinch too far. And with some of the older plantings, if you cut them too far back and we get years like this, then the growth is really going to be weak. And if you have flowers, they're going to bend it over. And so you need a little bit more shrub structure underneath in order to provide the support that those heavy blooms might need. But again, hydrangeas, they are water hogs. And so if you have had any kind of water issues and they haven't been watered, you're going to see some stuntage on them this year.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Linda. Appreciate your call. Kristen in Houghton, Michigan, it's your turn. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I do not have a question about hydrangeas. I've got a question about the globular campanulas. Apparently, they just hate my yard. I've tried 3 times now to transplant them to my yard from 3 different people, my mom, my neighbor, my coworker. I've tried transplanting them in the spring, in the summer, in the fall, before they bloom, while they bloom, after they're done blooming, and they just hate me. I'm not sure what I'm doing.
No, I don't think they hate you, but it doesn't sound like they're happy with the site. So describe the site to me that you're putting them in.
The site I've tried twice is a very, very sandy soil.
There you go. They like a little bit more structure. They're going to want some loam. They're going to want something that will hold some moisture but not keep their roots wet. And so you may have to amend a site. If all you have is sandy soil, even if you're transplanting them from a neighbor, they may have a little bit more of a developed planting bed than what you're putting them into. So that was 2 sites. What about some of the other ones that you've tried?
The other one was less sandy, a little bit more like earth. Mm-hmm. But that one was a little bit more shady, well, quite a bit more shady than the sandy, sunny spot.
And typically they will handle a little bit of shade, but if it's heavy shade, more than likely, even if they did survive, they would have been a little floppy. So they will tolerate a good amount of shade. The flowering won't be quite as nice, and the plants won't be as upright. And you will see them listed as, like, I think part to full shade on some of the cultivars, but I do find them getting a little bit more floppy in the shade. Develop a planting area over some time. I would say give yourself a good 2 years to start really introducing more compost into an area. You do not want to develop a container garden, and you know sand isn't going to allow you to do that anyway. So you're going to have to use some larger textured compost and really develop that over a couple of years, and then give it another whirl.
And compost, what should she be using?
It really depends on what you have available. Almost anything that is well composted, you could do horse manure, you could do even the compost that you make yourself, as long as it's heated and you can get a soil thermometer that's going to put you up to about 160, 165, which is going to kill any pathogens and weed seeds, etc. As long as you're doing that, you can use almost anything.
All right. Thank you, Kristen, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You mentioned lime hydrangea, and mm-hmm. it reminded me of Limey, my lime tree.
How is Limey?
Limey is so full of limes right now. She's tilting over to one side, and I have to figure out a way to kind of get her straightened back up again.
I say a pole in it. We'll tie it. Get her a little tie-up.
Should I get her a tie-up?
Yeah, get her a tie-up. Actually, they'll be fine. Even if you don't do anything, they'll be fine.
I was thinking about tying her to the... she's outside, and I was thinking of tying... You know, on my porch, my second-story porch, and I was mm-hmm. thinking of tying a rope to the edge of...
leashing your lime tree? Next, we'll see you out walking it in a stroller, but whatever.
Well, she has lots of limes right now, so there are some good things in the future for me.
I say, yeah.
Oh, man, always fun talking with Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Ho, and I always love talking with her, and great to have her here. For Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Larry Mueller, and you stay with us. Welcome back to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Ho. And taking your gardening questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. By the way, Liz, have you got that website going?
Yeah, I think so. I understand it's still up.
I didn't look at it this morning.
I'm not real diligent about doing anything, but yeah, it's thegardenho.com. It's thegardenho.com.
Yeah. There you go.
It'll have something on it, I think.
Well, that's how to get a hold of you, too.
I'm not real good at a social presence. and actually, if you want to reach me, email it to thegardenhoknows@gmail.com. If somebody has a question, they can get a hold of me there, too. Yeah, we were talking off air, and I have to mention the plant because it's now stuck in my head.
Yes.
Asclepias, that is the milkweed, and one called Hello Yellow that is absolutely fantastic. And so if you see it out and about, I would buy it because it's a keeper. It is a real keeper. It has flowers all along the stem, and we're talking about milkweed that shoots off the nice orange flowers. So this is a little bit goldier, and it has flowers all along the stem. And so it's really, really quite outstanding. Loving it.
And again, the name?
Asclepias, and that's... Oh, I'm going to have to spell it, aren't I?
No, Hello Yellow is good enough.
C-L-E-P-I something. Yeah, Hello Yellow. Hello Yellow Milkweed. If you go and ask for that at the garden center, they'll be able to find it for you.
There you go. Martha in Wausau, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Well, back to hydrangeas, I bought a hydrangea tree or dwarf tree this spring and I bought it bare root. It's doing well, but it's in a partial shade location that has sun for 3 hours a day, maybe 4 hours, and yet it is leaning towards more sun.
Sure.
That you know, it's reaching out, and I don't understand if I should be staking it now or waiting till fall. I've had some varying opinions. What would you suggest?
I would suggest just leave it alone. Hydrangea paniculata will actually do fine in partial shade. It doesn't flower as much. You may always have a part of that hydrangea shrub that is going to reach toward the sun, or it may actually develop more flowers on that side. It might be a little wonky looking, but over time it'll adjust and it'll be fine. If you want to stake it, I would say you can go ahead and do that now, but you will probably have to stake it for the next like 4 or 5 years. And so you may just want to let it do what it's going to do. At this point, it's very young. If it was a bare root plant, you're really talking about something that is basically a stick whip. And so it's going to develop its own shape, height, etc. as it goes. If you're concerned about it coming out of the ground, then definitely I'd stake it. And you would do that with stakes, you know, like you would do similarly to a tree, three around the perimeter and then kind of divide that into thirds and not tight. You want that to move back and forth with the wind. That'll develop a nice strong structure on the stem of that shrub. But quite honestly, it seems like you really wouldn't have to do that, and you might just be making more work for yourself, because I think it'll be just fine. I think it'll be just fine.
There you go, Martha.
You know what I'd say? Just take a glass of wine out and go look at it once in a while and talk to it, and that's really all you need to do.
Okay. Thanks, Martha. Appreciate the call. Well, let's go to Grafton. Let's talk to Karen next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm calling about my potentilla bushes.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't, they were covered up by some buckthorn, which I just cut down and discovered the potentillas.
Ah, magic.
It's been about 5 years since I've dealt with my yard at all, so everything's really overgrown. But
okay.
So the potentillas used to, you know, in my memory, used to be really nice and pretty. What I'm seeing now is there's probably about four bushes, maybe three, but there's only like a couple of ones with leaves on it. The rest look like they're dead or old wood. I just don't know how to help them other than I took away, obviously, the shady buckthorn.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, do I cut back anything that doesn't have leaves on it, or do I let them see what happens next year? Or
I would do a wait and see on those. Typically, if you want to rejuvenate those, you would do that early in the spring before the growth starts. And so I think if you cut them back now, let's see, Grafton, you may have enough time for them to regrow, but I'm not so sure that they're going to be happiest over winter if you do that. And because you took away the shade, there is the potential that there's not 100% death on those branches, and you won't know until you let them get some sun and see what they're going to do. So I would say plan for next year. If there's something that's definitely dead, that's something you can cut out any time of the year. Anything dead, diseased, etc., that you can take out at any time. But if you're talking about rejuvenating growth, then you really do want to see what's there before you start hacking and whacking. So I would do a little patient wait and see and make sure that you keep the buckthorn away from it, make sure it's getting some sun, take out the dead, diseased, but then just wait and see next year again. Before things start to open up, you'll be able to see how far back you can cut it back. But you can go to about 12 inches, 18 inches easily.
There you go. Thanks, Karen, for calling. Beth in Madison, your turn. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I've got four different perennials growing in large pots on my brand new patio garden, and I'm trying to figure out if they need to be brought into the garage for the winter. The catch to all of it is they are all vines, and so they are growing in trellises that are in the ground.
Ah, okay. Is there a reason why they're in pots?
Because it's
I live in an apartment. I can't plant anything.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. All right. Having anything in pots over winter in Wisconsin is interesting at best. There are situations that I've had where I have put evergreens into containers outside in the middle of nowhere and just expected to have them, you know, like be for holiday decorations and die. 3 years later, they're still alive. There's no reason why they're still alive other than they're tough. So you can actually get things to survive in containers without a whole lot of effort, except when you're on a patio, you do have some coverage. I would imagine in an apartment building, there must be sides or something on your patio. And if that's the case, you're going to get a little bit of protection. But if you really want them to survive, probably about 80%, you know, sure, I would say you're going to have to cover those pots with something that's going to be somewhat insulating, packing blankets, something like that. And the reason is you're not trying to prevent the cold from getting at the tops of the plants. You're trying to prevent temperature changes on the container itself, which will then activate the roots. So if you get a nice sunny day in the winter, the roots are going to be close to that container. They're going to say, hey, let's come alive. And then you get a cold snap that night, and then those roots go, ugh, and they're dead. So what you want to do is moderate the effects of winter that we have. And so again, packing blankets, even if you've got lawn furniture, something like that, kind of put it, or patio furniture that you can put around that, that will help. Insulating, anything that's insulating, so even bubble wrap, which I'm sure would just be wonderful for all your neighbors to look at, that at least would give you some protection. And then you might be able to do just fine with them. The vines themselves, the tops are going to survive if they're perennially hardy. For this area, they're going to survive just as well if the roots are well taken care of as any other plant in the ground.
There you go. Thank you so much. Good luck,
Good
Beth.
Luck with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Leslie and Tomahawk, your turn now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. It is another hydrangea question.
That's all
well,
right.
Well, they're blooming. They're blooming. We know it's that time. What can I do for you?
Right. I have an Incredibel hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
Which is truly incredible. The blossoms on it, we have some that are as big as a soccer ball.
Isn't that fabulous?
It's the fourth year for it, and I noticed this year the whole center part is dead, and it's just branching up from the outer part. So I'm guessing it needs to be dug and divided. Wondering when to do that.
After it flowers, so you could do that in the fall, you know, after it's done actively flowering, or spring. Either one is going to be fine. If you do it in the fall, take plenty of root because you will lose some over winter if it's a late fall split. If you wait until spring, just expect that you're not going to have the bloom show for a couple of years that you have had. But if you do nothing, then I don't think you're going to be happy with that either. So a little bit of sacrificing will be fine. You could easily divide that in half or thirds, and you should be okay with that. And then with that one, a sharp spade through the center, and then, you know, dividing out however you want from there, and that should be fine. They're pretty tough, but it does take them a couple of years to come back from a dividing.
All right. Thanks, Leslie, for calling. Tovia in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Tuvia, I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
I have two quick questions. The first is it too late in the season to plant flower seeds? And the second question is, I have an aloe vera plant. The bottom leaves have died and been cut off, so I have about 6 to 7 inches of bare stem without leaves, and above that, plenty of leaves. It needs to be replanted. Do I need to leave that part of the stem exposed, or can I put it underground?
Okay, first question, seeds. Are you wanting to plant these outside?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little late, depending on what the seed is and what you expect to get for flowers. Do you have particular seeds, or you just wanted to plant something?
It's a mixture of seeds that I got that are supposed to attract bees.
Okay, yeah, maybe we are too late for you to do that. I would save it for next year and put it in next year, especially if it's annuals. If you look at the mix and there's perennials in there, then you can go ahead and plant that outside. You just won't see much happening until next year, which is fine, as long as they get in fairly soon. At this time of the year, if you're going to do that, planting things for next year, make sure that they're well watered, because this time of the year, even one sunny day without water on them, and the seedlings can shrivel up fairly easily. So if they've got perennials in them, you can go ahead and do that and do it now, and then you should get some flowers next year. If they're annuals, I would just save them for next year and make sure that you put them into the ground. Depending on what's in the mix, generally around Memorial Day would be fine. If they're really cold hardy plants, you could probably do it a couple weeks before that. Again, depending on the weather and when we get last frost. Typically, our last freezing frost is, or our average date is May 17th. And then our first frost date is September 17th. So we're coming up on 2 months before our first hard freeze date. So you do want to make sure that anything you're putting in the ground has got plenty of time to grow before it gets hit. As far as the aloe, I'm going to go with a big, I don't know. I'm going to guess that you are not going to be able to plant that underground. And when you take that plant out of the pot, you should be able to tell the difference between the underground tissue and the above ground tissue. And anytime you put above ground tissue underneath the soil, I would suspect you're going to get rot, you're going to get disease, you're going to get death, because that's not the tissue that wants to be underground. It doesn't like to be exposed to moisture, et cetera, and especially with an aloe plant, which typically doesn't like moisture anyway. So even though I say a big, I don't know, I'd have to check on that. Instinct tells me, yeah, don't do that. Right. And maybe what you should do is just start another plant or get another one.
Yeah, there you go.
Or enjoy it, because I would imagine it looks kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. Tuvia, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
And good luck with the seeds, whichever way they go.
Yeah, and Chris in Shamrock, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very simple question. I need a recommendation. Mm-hmm. I have an ash tree, which has now, we tried hard to keep the emerald ash borers away from it, and now it is not going to recover.
Yeah.
It is probably, or what I'm looking for is a recommendation of what to replace that tree with.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there for a long time. We kept the tree there. We bought our in-laws' property. They planted the tree. We since bought the place, and we built a house. And we actually, the foundation of the house is maybe 25 feet from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were actually able to excavate around it and put the foundation there and stuff. But regardless, that tree is on the way out. And I'd like to replace it with something that you guys would recommend. But I was looking at it's a something crimson maple. And I'm wondering if that's a good idea.
It depends You do like the look. It really depends on what you're looking for from the tree. Are you looking for shade, or are you looking for ornamental value only?
I guess at the end of the house, the shade's not a big deal. I just like the color of that red.
Mm-hmm. And size-wise, what are you looking at for size that would be optimal for your house? Height? Is it a two-story house, one-story?
It's a one-story house, but it has... it's the original ranch-style house where the porch goes all the way across the front.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a big roof over that, but then it goes to a higher pitch when it goes over the regular part of the house.
Yeah.
So the peak is way up there a ways. But.
Okay, and where is Shamrock?
It is just south of Black River Falls.
Okay. I would say, I wonder if Laura's got a tree recommendation for that area. I know she likes oaks, but for most of us, that's planting for the future, so you're not going to want that in the front of your house. You're going to want that in the back so that your grandkids can play on underneath it. The maples are good. Hard maples I like. If you like the Crimson King, I don't see any reason, or whatever it is,
should
Crimson
be fine
something.
There.
Yeah, and it's got beautiful color on it, if that's something that you like, I would say go for it. Especially if the shape and the height, et cetera, are fine. What you are going to have to do once they remove that tree is accommodate placement with how many roots they can get out? Because if that's a fairly large tree, you may have a few roots to work around. Not that I would worry about it, but just make sure that they excavate the grind up the stump enough so that you're not dealing with sinking soil right next to where you plant a new tree. Because as those roots decompose, you're going to have the soil level sink around them, so you will have to do some fill over the next 10 years or so. So just place your tree accordingly. But if you like the maple, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be fantastic.
Should be fine right there, for sure. Thanks, Chris. Good luck. Appreciate it. We will turn to William in Madison next. Hi, William.
Hey, so I'm really excited, first time on the show. I have a question. I'm trying to garden, and I'm having this, like, morning glory infestation. I want them in certain locations where they're growing up the porch and growing up on, like, the fence, but currently they're also trying to choke out, like, my sunflowers, some tomatoes. I tried mulching. I've tried pulling them up regularly, but they just keep coming back. Do you have any recommendations for, like, kind of a more permanent fix or way to isolate them in the locations that I want them?
What type of morning glory is this? Is this one you've planted or a wild one?
Wild ones. They're coming up with purple blooms.
Oh, really? Okay, so those are seeded from somewhere. Morning glories are tenacious at worst, and just don't close your eyes while you're sleeping because you may be covered with morning glories in the morning if you leave the window open. They can move very, very quickly. When you're pulling them, what you're doing is you're actually creating more plants. Not really what you wanted to hear, but when you pull them up and you break the roots, they run underground. And so wherever you break that, they actually send more plants up because they're like, yay, thank you. So what you might want to do is cut them off instead. And the roots on morning glories can actually run, you know, when you're talking about bindweed, which is in the same family, they can actually run like, you know, I don't know, forever, a mile or something. They can just go and go and go. And so these obviously have escaped from somewhere. If they're purple, they have escaped seed. Somebody had planted them at some point in time. If you want to kind of aim them in a direction, you may have to just train a handful and then cut off the rest of them and just keep at it. You can actually change direction by not allowing them to grow above ground. But as soon as you break that root, you're going to develop more. So that's about the only thing. Otherwise, you're looking at chemical applications to get rid of these things because anything else really just does not work very well at all. And what you're looking at is a systemic killer of some sort. You can try solar, but in our neck of the woods, that takes about 6 months, which we don't have. So I would say just kind of direct them, cut them off, and if that doesn't work, if that doesn't give you enough control, eradicate.
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 Yeah.
Welcome to the world of gardening.
Well, I tell you, this has been quite a day for hydrangeas, hasn't it?
It has. Do you know they're looking fantastic right now because they love the moisture, they love the humidity, and you know there's so many new cultivars out there. Somebody had talked about Invincible and Bobo. If people don't know about Bobo, it's a short Annabelle-sized bloomed hydrangea that only gets to be less than 2 feet tall. And so it's absolutely fantastic. And it has a couple of other names underneath it, but Bobo is great. And then there's a pink one that is an Invincible, I believe, that is just wonderful. It's a beautiful pink, beautiful, nice, moderate to deep pink that fades to light pink when it's done blooming. And so those are really good growers for us here.
And they don't blow over in the wind?
No. And if you're looking for one that is really, really upright in habit, that's white, there's one called Ryan Gainey, and it's Ryan, G-A-I-N-E-Y. He unfortunately has passed away, but was a garden designer out of Atlanta. Fantastic man. Met with him a number of times throughout the years, and he had developed a lovely upright, kind of flatter-headed hydrangea that stands very, very upright, and it's fantastic for cut arrangements.
Boy, we've covered a lot today, and as always, it's a great pleasure to have you with us, Liz.
Oh, I love coming. I just enjoy all of the listeners and the callers out there. It's absolutely fantastic.
And they're going to find something on your website.
They will find some. I think. I'm pretty sure I still have one. So, yeah, there might be something there.
Well, I bet you there's some contact information in there for
there
sure.
There is. There is.
Thank you so much, Liz. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Liz Freemuth, who runs a great concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hole. Great to have her with us. We'll get her back. We'll do it again. Monday at 11, we'll check in with the folks of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center about their research experience for undergrads. And then the weather guys, must be the last Monday of the month. I bet it is, because they're back with us, and we'll take a look at summer heat waves and take your weather questions. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.